Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge, and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. No set schedule, it's just whenever I finish the book, I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed. And not just science fiction books, also fantasy books as well. This is a book that I read and finished about middle of last week, so maybe 10 days since I actually finished reading this. But I've been a bit busy. I've been working on a cruise ship, sailing up the Amazon to the top of the Amazon to Manaus, and then back down the Amazon again and back, and now I'm heading up towards Barbados, hopefully to fly home. It's been a bit crazy. I was very ill with tonsillitis for a while, and then, just random stuff has been happening. But hey, I thought I'd just finish off this book review before I head home tomorrow, just to get it out of the way. Thanks a lot for the emails and different book suggestions that have been coming through. Luke@juggler.net is a great way to get hold of me. Otherwise, you can send me suggestions and follow me on goodreads.com/Luke Burridge. You can be my friend or follow me or whatever you need to do and send me messages there. That's a great way to do it as well. But keep sending this stuff in. I really enjoy it. I read and reply to every single email that I get, and normally comment on comments on goodreads.com as well. And also, if you put up reviews of books that I've read on goodreads.com, I'll often comment on your reviews too, because that's what I enjoy doing too. So, let's get to today's book. It's called Wise Man's Fear, and it's by Patrick Rothfuss. It's the second book in a series called The King Killer Chronicles. It's King Killer Chronicles book number 2. It was released about a month ago, this year anyway, 2011 book. It's a very new book. And last year, I think it was episode number 99, I think it was, or 101, or somewhere around episode number 100, I read the first book in the series, and that was called The Name of the Wind. And as I was reading it, I mentioned, I did that review, so maybe this review won't make a lot of sense if you've not listened to my first review. I've not listened back to my first review, but I remember some of the things that I said about it. One thing that I said about it is that it was very long, and it was a bit weird in that it took me 24 hours or 28 hours of listening to get through it with one person telling another person's story, and I thought that it was a 3-day story, and each of the 3 days would take about an 8 hours worth of telling, and then at the end of each 8 hours would go, they'd be go to sleep and get up, and there'd be another 8 hours. But it turns out that within 24 hours of narrative time, someone can actually talk for 28 hours at the speed of somebody telling a story, like the narrator is doing and like the narrated character is doing within the book. If that's a bit confusing, well, let me just put it this way. In this book, this is a 48 or something hour audiobook, and it's mostly comprises of one person telling a story to another two people, and he tells this story over the course of, maybe at the most 10 hours in one day, and yet it takes him 48 hours, or maybe, no, there's probably about 2 hours worth of non-narrative time. So maybe it takes him 46 hours worth of telling this story, which in the narrative time only takes him 8 hours, or put it this way, less than 24 hours a day. So it's a very long book, and the first book was very long, and this is even longer. But when I was listening to the first book, I liked it quite a bit, but the thing is, it felt very much like background listening, and I didn't really have to pay that much attention because I knew at any one point there wasn't actually anything going to happen, or it felt like nothing really important happened. It was very much sort of like the development of the character of Kvothe, who's this young boy who goes off to magician school, and he does this and he does that, he does this, and then he meets that person, and then he makes some money, and then he loses some money, and then he needs some money, so he borrows some money, and then he makes some money and leads his money, and all these different kind of things. I said this in my first review, but that's what we got: a lot of one person doing lots of things which none of them really seemed that important, but obviously would contribute in some ways to his character. But like I say, background listening, but I enjoyed it pretty good. I think I gave it 3 stars or maybe 3.5 stars or something like that, because there was a lot of stuff in there that I enjoyed, a lot of stuff that I didn't enjoy. But I said that when the second book comes around, if I needed some, if I had a spare Audible credit and I had a lot of time to kill, I'd probably download it and listen to it. So that's what happened. This book came out just recently, and I had a spare Audible credit, and it's a good value for money, 48 hours worth of audiobook for one Audible credit. And I did have a lot of time coming up to kill because I was going on this big work trip, and I often have time to kill. I'm flying over. It was like 18 hours to fly over from Germany, or I spent 18 hours on planes going from Germany down to Recife in Brazil to join the ship. And I thought, hey, this book is going to be perfect, because I managed to get through around about 10 hours just in that one journey itself. And I'm going to say right away, this book was perfect background listening. And then I got tonsillitis. Oh no, even before I went away on the trip, I had tonsillitis as well. So I spent a long time laying in bed, not having enough energy to sort of do any like stuff on the computer, not have any energy to move or anything like that, but wasn't tired enough to be falling asleep. But that's a perfect time to start listening to a big audiobook like this. And so then for the first week I was on the ship, up until sort of like last week, I was very ill, or mostly ill, and I did spend a lot of time laying down listening to this book, so I managed to get through it quite easy. Background listening in that point was exactly what I wanted. So as a book, as a novel itself, not great. So I'm going to throw this out here right at the very beginning. It was exactly the book that I needed. I really enjoyed listening to it. However, as a novel, I don't rate it very highly, because it's just too big and just too meandering and doesn't feel like it's going anywhere. So when I get to the end of this review, I'm going to give it like a higher rating than I would do. Like, put it this way, if this book was a paper book, I would never read it. I would have started this and realized what was happening even at the very beginning of the book. I might have got maybe 50 pages in or 100 pages in, but there's something that happens quite early on in the book which would have made me put the book down if I actually had to spend any energy looking at the book and turning the pages myself. Thankfully, I had Nick Podell, the narrator, to do that for me. So let's just get into the review properly after that setup there. It's set, well, I pretty much covered this in the first review, but you know, sort of late medieval level technology tempered with magic, you know. In the first book, it was very much like, hey, we go to this one road, and then we go into this one city, and then we go to this one university, which is in another town, and that's it. That was the setting of this, of the first book. And I actually think in the first review I complained, or the review of the first book, I've complained that the we didn't really get a wider view of the world itself. You know, we just go here, we go there, oh, and then he goes into the countryside to battle the common Dracus at the end. But there wasn't really a whole lot going on. This, we definitely get a wider view. We know that there's other cities and kingdoms and some forests and some other things going on there. I still don't have a map of this world because it's an audiobook. Maybe if I go online, I could find a map of the different places that it goes. But you definitely get a sense of the wider world. And I might as well skip forward and just talk a little bit about the magic as well. Because in the first book, one of the things that I didn't like so much, I enjoyed the different kind of magics. There was quite a few different kinds of magic systems put in place, but I didn't feel like they fitted together. There was this thing where if you know the names of something, you can control it, but then there's something called sigildry, where you write something down, you can make... Then there's another thing which is more like voodoo with the sympathetic magic. If you have something which is very like something else, and you do something to it, it affects the other one as well. And these seem to be... Well, it felt a bit weird, because at one point he was learning one kind of magic, and then another point he was learning another kind of magic, and they didn't feel connected. Thankfully, in this book, the whole magic systems seem to be tied together a lot more. We spend a bit more time doing that. He gets a bit more of a hang of the different magic itself, and there's a few clunky bits of dialogue where he's like, and now this is how the magic works. Instead of seeing real usage of it, it seems to be like, and now we're going to have a lesson. This person is going to get a lesson in how this magic works, and there we go. But yeah, the magic is better defined, the world is better defined, the places that he goes to seems to be a bit more grounded in some kind of reality, which is great for the setting. Okay, so onto the plot of this book. We end the first book with Kroth confronting Jackis, and Jackis is his long-term student nemesis within the university, this magic university that he goes to, the Arcanum Magic University, and this confrontation with Jackis is sort of like the culmination of this year-long, two-term-long rivalry between the two of them. Jackis is very rich, Kroth is very poor, but Jackis obviously doesn't have a lot of talent for very much except having a rich dad, and Kroth has lots and lots of talent and stuff like that. But so it's always a power play between talent and money, or that's, I guess, what they're trying to go for there as well. And it ends up that Kroth manages to call the name of the wind, which isn't a spoiler, because that's the name of the book. It's called The Name of the Wind. So he manages to call the name of the wind and kick Jackis's ass, Ambrose Jackis. And then, of course, he gets told off by the university. And I thought that that would be the end of the storyline. Jackis would go, okay, he won or anything like that. But no, as soon as the second book starts, we get a bit of a frame story where Kvothe is later in life is telling his story to the Chronicler. But then we get straight back into it. Kvothe is still hanging out at university. He immediately rekindles his feud with Jackis, which I'm going, wait a second, this guy's meant to be really clever. You know, Kvothe is meant to be really clever and intelligent, but he's not. He's just so stupid all the time. He just gets himself into trouble all the time, just with his big mouth. And he's immediately skint again and has no money, and so he has to borrow money. And then he gets in trouble with his teachers. And then he's still chasing Denna, who is his alluring prostitute love interest and things like that. And then for the first half of this book, it's pretty much goes, it should have just said, hey, remember what was happening at in the second half of the first book? Well, just think that that happens for another 300 or 400 pages. Go. And you think about it and you go, yeah, I can imagine that. And then we might as well have just done that. The first half of this book is a bit slow, not because it's slow, not because the action isn't interesting or anything like that. Mainly, though, because because it's just sort of like rehashing old ground. We know that he, you know, it tries hard at school, but then he gets misunderstood by his teachers. And we know this and we know that and all these different kinds of things. And all these different questions that were had there at the university. Like, he's got this, I can't remember if I mentioned it in the first review, but he's got this girl who lives underneath the university, who is obviously going to be a real key to, I say obviously, it felt like in the first book she was obviously going to have some big impact on Kvothe's life later on. And all the way through this book, she's still there hanging around the background. You go, whoa, wait a second, we're going to have to get to day 3 of the King Killer Chronicles to find out why she is important to Kvothe. You know, there's some things about Denna that we can, of course, yeah, through in this book, we can see why she's becoming more important. You know, something to do with, I know it's a bit spoilerific to say why she's important, but it's so obvious when she suddenly comes up at the end of the book, she goes, oh, this mysterious language, I know how to speak that language. Yeah, it's not exactly what happens. I don't want to be a bit of a spoiler, but it's suddenly she comes back and you go, oh, okay, right, I can see what's happening here. And her patron that she has is like, oh, I can see what's going to happen here as well. And all these different kind of things. And you just think, well, you know, it's a bit strange that these questions about the university, which were there at the beginning, still not answered, even up until the point. So, halfway through the book, he gets taken to court for practicing witchcraft. At the end of the first book, he called the name of the wind. Other people saw him, say, oh, this is use of magic, this is witchcraft. Gets taken to court. Of course, the university doesn't want him to be, you know, prosecuted, but they also don't want to be associated with him, you know, for different ways. And then Kvothe just goes, oh, and you know the outcome of the court battle, I won. And Chronicle is like, what? You can't just say that. And I'm like, what? This is one of your legendary things. And then, you know, we just skip over the court battle. Literally, Kvothe just says, oh, wait, I'm not going to go into the details here. You know the details already. Other people have written about this court. You know, it's everything that was said in the court was written down. If you need the full story, just go back and read that. And the Chronicles go, whoa, what's going on? And I'm going, wait a second, what's going on? You just spent ages and ages and ages telling me about a song that Kvothe played in a tavern once, and this other thing, and this other thing between him and Jackis, and him and Ambrose, and him and this person, and him and this person. And then sort of like a major point in his life, one of the main things that made him become a legend in the Chronicler's eyes and everyone else's eyes, suddenly he just skips over that. So that's the end of the first half of the book. And then Kvothe's friends at university, who actually I really liked, getting onto some of the characters here, Kvothe's friends at university seem to be far more fleshed out at this point of the book as well, which is pretty cool. Anyway, so his friends say, hey, take a year off, or take a term off. Get away from the university, get away from Ambrose, get away from the lecturers who don't really want you there. You're too much of a liability for the university. Take some time off. So Kvothe goes, oh, okay, let's do that. I'm going to take some time off. And now this is where things sort of started getting interesting in the book in some ways, but also less interesting in other ways, and more interesting in some ways, but then more stupid in other ways. And I say stupid because here on in, Kvothe seems to have no control over what happens. You know, he's been, beforehand and in the previous book as well, he's been looking for a patron to help him out so he can play music for the patron and be an entertainer for the patron, and then the patron will help him, you know, he'll buy him clothes and help pay for his accommodation, help pay for, you know, his tuition at university and things like that. And he hasn't had any luck. But suddenly, as he suddenly goes, okay, now I'm going to take a year off. Yeah, I think I better take a year off. A rich friend of his gets a letter from a mayor of Richville, over in Rich Country, And is asking for a good poet or songwriter for a secret project. And he approaches Quoth and says, "Hey, will this interest you? And of course, Quoth goes, "Yeah, of course. I'll just leave behind the university and go off on a secret adventure. And so he does. And it's perfect for Quoth, and he has an interesting journey to get to Richville, to the mayor, the richest man in the world. But we don't read about that, and it's summed up in a few sentences. It just goes, "Oh yeah, I went here, I was shipwrecked, I was robbed," and stuff like that. Just like the court battle, it's all skipped over. And my bet is that Patrick Rothfuss was writing these, and then he goes, "Oh, wait a second, this book is 48 hours long on audiobook," which is probably around about, what, 800 to 1,000 pages? I don't even know how long books are at that, you know, that many hours of audiobook listening. But he decided to cut some of these incidents out. And I think they were written because at some points Quoth, later on in the story, refers back to those events as though he expects us, the readers, to be familiar with them as though he's told them, because he refers back to them in the same way that he refers back to parts of the story he's told. He just goes, "Oh yeah, this happened then, you remember then in the court battle?" And I'm like, "No, because you didn't tell us it." And I'm thinking, "Well, no, because you didn't tell us about the sea journey that you had." And then what happens is he doesn't control the story. It's all coincidences from then on in. It's like, what is his job? Now, a little bit of a spoiler here. The job is to help woo a woman. This is apparently what rich people do. They pay poets to write poems and songs and things like that, and to provide gifts to the woman that they want to woo, and become husband or wife. Now, the mayor, I can't remember the name of the city that he lives in, or the place that he's a ruler of, but it's called the mayor. And there's this princess woman who used to be a princess, and now she's not a princess, she's just a lady, because of all these lands, there's a different kingdom ruling these lands. So the mayor, he used to be like the king, but now is the title of the mayor, and this princess is just a lady or something like that. But two very powerful women. And who is the woman? It's some rich lady with red hair. I can't remember her name, but red-haired rich woman who's a princess and the heir to a large, large fortune. But the thing is that woman was never meant to be the heir to this large fortune. Her older sister was meant to be, we find this out quite quickly, her older sister was meant to be the princess, but then she abdicated and she ran off with a troop of Rue, which are I can't remember the name of it, but they're the travelling musicians who Quoth used to be a part of. Now, if Quoth was really intelligent, he would be like, "Wow, this is really important. Ah, this is fascinating. You know, so I used to be in a traveling musician group. This is fascinating. Which traveling group did she run off with, you know, to run off to be, you know, to fall in, she fell in love with some songwriter and ran off to be in this troupe?" And he'd be like, "Wow, which troupe? It's just like my own troupe. And I wonder where she is now. What's she doing that no, she's no longer around to, you know, rule and to be an heir to this massive fortune?" But he doesn't even have mild curiosity, because if he had even mild curiosity, he would have realized the obvious truth. Red-headed Quoth, we're told all the way through he's got red hair, and then, you know, this woman that he has to woo for the mayor has got red hair, and I'm like, it's your mother's sister, you're trying, and this is a big spoiler, of course, but who gives a shit? It's foreshadowed in such a clumsy way throughout the first half of the book, and is driven home really bluntly. Like I mentioned in the first book, it's like, "Hey, there's a book here called The Mating Habits of the Common Dracus," and you're like, "Common Dracus? What's a common dracus?" "Well, it's a kind of dragon." "Is it?" "Yes, it is." "Oh, and here's another copy of the Common Dracus." "Oh, we're finding out lots about the Common Dracus. What's going to happen at the end of the book?" There's going to be a dragon, isn't there? Oh, there's a dragon at the end of the book. And there's another few of these things that happen through this book. It's like, "Oh, there's this person called Falurian." "Who's Falurian?" "No, Falurian, no, she isn't going to be important. No, she isn't going to be important." Nothing like that. So, yeah, it's a very strange, clumsy thing that you think, "Oh, okay, so this is obviously going to come back, hopefully going to come back in book three, because it wasn't really mentioned again, because he just didn't know. He's so stupid, or maybe he's just playing games with the, Quoth within the story is playing games with the chronicler, and this is going to be a big reveal. But even then, the chronicler should be like, "Hey, wait a second." He should be like, "Wait a second, this woman that you're talking about, isn't she your aunt? Isn't it really obvious that she's your aunt?" But nobody picks up on it in the book. Anyway, so, Quoth, what's my note here? I said if anything hinges on this in the third book, that, like, Quoth's ignorance of this, or anyone's ignorance of this situation, I'm going to stab my ear with a fork. So, and then at some point, randomly, Denna turns up again. Surprise! She does that quite often in this book. She normally did it in the first book as well. And then Quoth is sent out to kill some bandits, and I'm not quite sure, but he decides, yeah, I'll just do this, no water. And there's another massive coincidence on the way that we find out about later. I'm not, you know, that's a bit of more of a spoiler, though, so I'm not going to go. But this bandit-killing part is actually quite fun, because we get a glimpse of how dangerous Quoth can be with magic, and when he applies his magic and things. And then on the way back, we have this other massive coincidence, which is one that's foreshadowed painfully, like I say. Oh, Falurian. Oh, I just foreshadowed it here in my review. I mentioned someone called Falurian, and now I'm going to mention Falurian again. She is a woman who is known to kill men with sex. Well, not a woman. She's a fairy woman who spirits men. She sings to them like a siren, and then they come over to her, and then she has sex with them so much that they die or go mad or anything like that. And of course, Quoth, after mentioning this a lot of times to the people he's spending time with, and they talk about Falurian quite a bit, check it out! They meet Falurian on the way back, and Quoth has a lot of sex. But not just any kind of sex, the best sex. Because this is Quoth. He can't just be like a good musician, he has to be the best musician in the world. He can't just be good at this, he's got to be the best in the world. And of course, when he loses his virginity, because he's been very chaste up until this point, he can't just lose his virginity in the way that, say, I lost my virginity, which was a bit like, so he has to lose the virginity to, yeah, anyway, it's quite fun actually, because Quoth spends some time learning about sex. I'm not going to go into too much details, but the naming of the sexual moves is quite funny as well. Like one of them is called love making technique number 347 is called the thousand fingers and stuff like that. And then after that, Quoth then spends some time with the Adem, which is some society made up of fighters, and they name all of their fighting techniques in the same way that Falurian names all of her love making technique. So I actually quite found that quite interesting with these different naming conventions. You know, thousand fingers versus the widower's fist or something like that. And we never find out really what these moves are. They just say, oh, this one person performs one move and one person performs another move back and in return, and then they either block it and it either knocks them over unconscious or gives them an orgasm, depending, you know, if they're fighting or fucking or anything like that. So then Quoth returns to university, and he knows how to fight, and he knows how to fuck, and he's got a bit more experience in the world, but he doesn't use any of this experience to move on. What he goes back to is more counting coins, and then more trouble with his teachers, and then other stuff, and then the book ends. And I'm thinking, oh, that's great. Oh, that's really great. So by the end of 48 hours worth of audiobook listening, he's gone from the university to the university. He's learned a few things on the way, but he's still an idiot who doesn't know who his own aunt is. He still can't say two words in a row, which doesn't get him into trouble. Sure, he's got a bit of money now because, you know, he's moved on in the world. But really, nothing happens in the main story, because I thought the main story of this book was child, parents and whole family and whole troop are killed by the Chandrian, the seven Chandrian. We find this out in the first book. Mild spoiler if you've not read that yet. No, I don't think it's a spoiler. I think it's actually mentioned quite quickly in this book. Anyway, so you think, he's wanting to learn magic to then avenge the death of his parents, the Chandrian who killed him. And then there's some other people that he has to find out about them as well. So he's wanting to find out about these topics, but he never gets around to asking anybody. He always talks about, oh yeah, if I do this, I'll be able to get in their good favours, then I'll be able to ask about the Chandrian. But always something comes up and he can't do it. And it seems, in some ways, he says it's the most important thing for him, but it seems to be in every situation, it's the last thing he concentrates on. I'm thinking, if you want to fight and kill the Chandrian, why don't you learn magic? And learn magic which kills magical beings and stuff like that. But then that's hardly discussed. And it's like his fighting training, which might help kill magical beings, sort of comes about in a random, almost disconnected, coincidental way. And he only learns those skills after they might have been useful, you know, further on in the book, like earlier on in the book and stuff like that. So I'm thinking again, what is the driving force behind the plot of the book? Except that Patrick Rothfuss was told, hey, you've got to have a book out. And he's written so much. And he's like, oh, okay, it's out. But the driving force behind the book, which is this mystery behind who are the Chandrian and what's going wrong in the world and all that kind of stuff, this book asks more questions. We find out another, I can't remember, is it the Emir? Another secret sect, and we suddenly find out about them. Never heard of them in the first book, but suddenly now the Emir are there. But then all of these other questions, like who is Denna's patron? Who is, you know, the weird girl who's sitting around? What does this mean? You know, all these different questions that we have. None of them really seem to be answered in this second book. So this is a book which could be, in some ways, if you don't just want 48 hours worth of background listening, it could have been edited down to quarter of the length. I'd probably say quarter of the length, and I don't say many books could be edited down that far. I mean, just the time that he spends with Falurian just takes ages, and all the time that he spends in the Aedim, it's like, you know, you want a montage. You want, like, hey, hot sex with a girl, and it's just like, montage, 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 and then when he comes out, he should have more confidence around girls and should be better at, you know, interacting with girls, knowing that he's got his lovemaking, you know, merit badge from scouts or something like that. And then he goes, oh, you spend some time training with these people. It's like, you could just do, like, the Rocky montage of hitting sides of beef, running upstairs outside the, you know, the museum or whatever it is in Philadelphia. No, fuck it, I can't remember. And then, yeah, and just go like, yeah, okay, now he's a better fighter. But we get to loads and loads of tedious detail. And then all the stuff about the money as well. Oh, yeah, he did this. Oh, now he can earn money with this. Oh, now he does this. Now he's counting coins there and counting coins there. Oh, now he has to count coins in different currencies. And now we're constantly doing it. And it's just all this time. And it's a bit strange that that's there. And in a way, and I guess this is why it's called the Chronicles. Because each individual plot point and each individual little adventure that Quoth goes on is passingly interesting, exciting. You're like, oh, I wonder what's happening now. Oh, I wonder how this is going to turn out. But you know, like I say, he's telling this as a frame story, so you know he's not going to die. You know he's not, you know, nothing that important is going to happen, because there's the dramatic tension isn't there. It's just, you know, you just enjoy the writing, enjoy the storytelling, you enjoy the characters and stuff like that. But the actual driving force behind the plot is entirely missing. Even in the frame story, at the very beginning of the frame story, the first book, you get this spider battle. These magical spiders come out the ground and battle people. And then at the end of it, you get this, I can't remember what turns up in the way, but this monster turns up. It's mild spoilers here for the first book, but really not a lot to spoil. But it seemed like things were going on in the wider world on the first day of the Kingkiller Chronicles, day one. Day two, all of that seems to be stripped away, and there's a little bit going on, but even then it doesn't feel that urgent anymore. The urgency in the first book of him telling this story, and that this story is going to be important for the world to hear, and important that Chronicle is going to take it down, seems to be missing here. And I only read this book like less than a year ago. This, like, the first book, that is. I think it came out like 4 years ago. So I'd hate to have gone 4 years between reading these books. Of course, I think to read the last book, or the day three, I hate to say that's the last book, because you know how these fantasy series go. They suddenly go, oh, we're going to split this story, which takes in narrative time 8 hours into time. We're going to split it down into 2 48-hour books. And you're like, how is this even possible anymore? What was I saying? It'd be a bit weird if you don't remember all of the events that happened in the first book and why it's important. Suddenly this book seems to leave that apart, that again. One of the fun things about it, oh, what's this note here? Oh yeah, I mentioned that the characters at the beginning, this is also a bit annoying, that the characters that you started getting to know, which are his friends at this university, the friends at the magic school, and, you know, their journeys, their love interest, the things that they are doing, how they're developing at school, really interesting. But then when he goes off to this big adventure halfway through the book, you just leave them behind, and suddenly you're like, he's just hanging out by himself and he meets other people. But I'm like, oh, I was actually really interested in how he's getting on back with his friends back in university town, which is a bit of a pity. And also, yeah, talking about characters as well, Denna, just like, oh man, she's just like the most annoying person. One of the most annoying characters in any book is the love interest, who seems to have no redeemable qualities except Quoth is head over heels in love with her, and yet makes no move, even then when she seems to be begging for it. And then he's like, oh no, I'm doing the right thing, not making a move, because everyone takes advantage of her. And I'm just like, what? You know, it's a bit weird thing. I just had a weird experience yesterday of someone saying, hey, do you want to have sex with me? Now, it's not very often when people, I'm talking about my life here, like, it's not very often people, someone just says, hey, do you want to come and have sex with me? But it happened to me yesterday, and it would have been really cool, except that It turns out that that person doesn't, I'm not the only person she has ever said that to. Let me put it this way. And that is really weird and completely unattractive. Now, Denner is someone who seems to say yes to everyone except Quoth. And then Quoth is like going, oh, no, it's great. And she's going to love me for not touching her. And I'm like, wait a second. So all of these other men, anyway. Really weird thing going on there. You're like, either love someone and you actually want to be with them or want to spend some time with them, or you should just leave them alone and just stay out of their lives and be disconnected. It just seems a bit weird, this really fucked up relationship between, like, really abusive relationship between Denner and Quoth, and it seems to be all the abuse is going in one direction here. Very, very strange thing going on there. Anyway, yeah, and then Quoth, his own character itself, boneheaded, very stupid, calls himself perfect in his way. He's one of these kids who is too talented for his own good and doesn't see it, which, again, hopefully, I think actually what I said is at the end of my review of the first book, I said, I know where this book is going. He's going to turn evil. He's going to become a very dark character, and then he's going to be very, very dark and very, very dark, a bit like Darth Vader's journey throughout the first, you know, throughout the entire Star Wars epic. Starts of kid, starts of good, falls for Denner, Queen, whatever her name is, no, Princess Ahmadinejad, and then because of this love over the woman who gets taken away from her and does all this kind of stuff, he goes crazy, turns evil, and then at the very end, repents, spoilers, becomes good again, throws over the evil, and I thought this was going to be this, that he was going to turn evil in the second book, and then it's only at the end of day three where he kills the king, emperor, of Emperor Palpatine. Ah, oh, man, I'm not doing very well here with Star Wars names. And then becomes the legend and becomes good and goes. But instead of dying and being cremated by Luke in the forests of Hoth, let's say, he is no, not Hoth. That's the ice place. Anyway, with the Ewoks live. He is What am I trying to say? Endor? No, Endor is wrong. Instead of doing that, he goes and opens an inn with his fairy lover. But it doesn't. That's what I was thinking. But in this book, we get no further along in that journey, and I'm like, oh, and that's what I was really disappointed, because I thought this was going to be a big turn for him. He was going to start using his newfound magic to exert more influence in the university. And he said he was kicked out of the university younger than most people get in. We got to the end of the second book, he's still not kicked out of university yet. And I'm thinking, oh no. And all this big journey which he was going to go on, which was great in my head. I had this whole trilogy mapped out in a really cool way, in a really dark story, which is going to subvert people's expectations. They're going to become, you know, his Quoth is going to be the perfect kid who turns out too perfect and things. And no, nothing like that at all. He just gets slightly more boring throughout the book. What is good about the book, though, is this treatment of, well, let's just get straight onto some themes. I'll get onto some bits about the writing later. So, main theme of this book seems to be sort of what is legend and what is truth and what's the truth behind the legend and stuff like that. Because and the story itself doesn't even seem to be the story. It's almost a story of the story. Now, this idea is, I think, very, very interesting. One of my favourite hobbies, or one of my favourite topics of study, is the Bible. Now, lots of people say the Bible isn't very interesting. And of course, if you just read the Bible as a narrative, say the Gospels, say, you just read the Gospels, not very interesting at all, unless you're, say, a Christian, you can get some higher meaning out of it. But if you're just reading it, or maybe reading Genesis, it's a bit dry, you're thinking, oh, this isn't very interesting. However, what I really like to study is the stories behind, what the source documents might have said, the reasons why they're in there. I had this discussion a while ago where someone was saying about the actually, maybe I mentioned this on a podcast before. People were talking about the story of Lot and his daughters, and how his daughters got Lot drunk and then had sex with him because there was no other men to have sex with, and that's it. And they're thinking, oh, this is great, you know, it's incest in the Bible. And I was like, oh, well, actually, that story, you may think it's just a weird story about incest, and Lot was the righteous man as well. And you're thinking, okay, so this righteous man was the one. And I say, no, it's not that at all. This story is a legend told about the tribes, the different tribes around. around the where the Israelites or, you know, where, you know, the different tribes lived, and it was to talk about it. And I actually got down, because we were in a bookshop at the time, and I got down a copy of the Bible, I think it was a King James Version, flipped to that page, and it was right there in front of me. It said, so when this daughter had sex with the father, and she went on to give birth to this son, and this son, it doesn't say this son was the father of this tribe or was the ancestor of that tribe. It says, and this son is the ancestor of this tribe. And it's just, and so it's written not for as any kind of history or any kind of thing like that. It's actually written in the way that just says, okay, and so all of this tribe lives next door, the son and they are all the sons of this person who, let me put it this way, this person is their father, and this, the father was the offspring of incestuous rape, incestuous drunken, you know, father fucking rape. And for me, that is far more fascinating than the story itself, that it's actually a historic document to tell people who are living in the tribe of Israel, you know, hey, check it out, these guys next door, motherfuckers, no, not motherfuckers, fatherfuckers, you know. I have to put an explicit tab on this one. I've said fuck too many times. But that's what's interesting. The actual reason, the stories behind the legend and why they were told, and you can tease this out of the actual interpretation or the translation and the words that are right there. And that's why it's really strange. If you didn't know that, or if you were just reading the book or that story, and you'd be like, well, why does it say this, that he is the father of this tribe rather than he was the father of this tribe? It's like, well, you know, that tribe still lives next door, and it's a pop against them. Anyway, so that kind of thing I find fascinating. Except in this book, it seems to be that's what he's talking about. He's always like, oh, you've heard the story of my court battle. Well, it actually happened like this. Oh, you've heard the story of me going in this place. Oh, and it happened like that. Oh, and when I got back to the university, people were telling stories, and the stories caught up with me, and they were saying this and that. The thing is, unfortunately, we don't know what the legend is in the first place. Kvothe is the, you know, the king killer, whatever you call it. Kvothe the heartless, Kvothe the bloodless, Kvothe the, all these different kinds of things. We get these little snippets of it, but we don't get the full story in the same way that, it's strange that I was talking about this with, I think in the previous review when I was mentioning the real story, which was the first book in the Gap series by Stephen Donaldson. They said, okay, this is the story that everybody thought it was, but now here's the real story. Interesting, flawed book, but at least an interesting way. But here we go. Aha, here's the real story behind it. But we don't know who he is. He isn't, in our world, in the real world, Kvothe isn't someone like King Arthur or Merlin who we think we know all the stories about them. And then they go, aha, you think you know the story of King Arthur. Here's the real story of King Arthur. This has been done many times in fantasy, you know, with Arthur and Merlin, and also, you know, with Jesus and, you know, the beginning of the world and all these different kinds of things you read about. I'm just trying to think of examples off the top of my head, but it goes, ah, you think you know about the Egyptians? Well, this is the real truth behind the Egyptians. And it turns out spaceships, you know, the pyramids were landing pads for different sized spaceships. I think that's Stargate. Anyway, so we see the legends that we care about, the legends that have meanings on our lives, and then we find out the real stories behind them. Whereas in this book, where the legends that we don't know anything about, don't really care much about, and then we find out the truth behind them, and the message of the book seems to be, ah, the truth behind these legends aren't as exciting as the legends themselves, but these are legends that we haven't even heard, and so we don't even care that much about them. So we've got two layers of like, oh, is that the story behind the legend that I didn't know and didn't care about and isn't as interesting? Oh, we're told that it's not as interesting as the legend itself. Great. Well, that's great. That's a great message to have, that real life is more boring than legend, and the legend, the truth behind the legend is more boring than the legend, and the legend, we don't know how interesting it was anyway because we don't know the legend because we've never heard it before. It's a long way to say that point, but that seems to be the main theme of this book. Other themes in this book, women are about as interesting as music, and about as, you know, making love to them is about as interesting as playing a guitar, which, guess that's right, in a way, maybe. Other messages, I don't know, it's a bit of wishy-washy. Like I say, I was ill when I was reading this book, and it is very much background listening. Maybe by the end of book three, he will have gone in a different, like this character would have gone in a different direction. But even then, you know, all this stuff that he's learned how to fight, he's learned how to have sex, he's done this, he's been more experienced in the world, then he just turns up back, you know, goes back to the university and is like, Ambrose, now how can I dick over Ambrose again? I'm like, stop it! Don't do that anymore! Fucking put it away! You're better than him! Just quit it! You lost your virginity to Florian. You've become an expert fighter. You're doing this. You're an expert musician. You're better than everybody else in any way. Just leave him alone! Ambrose doesn't matter anymore. You know, it's all that kind of stuff. Anyway, really bad. So, oh yeah, finally, writing. Pretty good writing, sometimes a bit clumsy, lots of adverbs ending in "-ly". He did this surprisingly, he did this loudly, he did this, and it's a bit weird when that's being narrated to you. Sometimes on the page it works well. Oh, and Nick Podell, okay narrator, really not great. I have some issues with some of his pronunciations, but otherwise he's got a very young voice, and I really don't, I sometimes think that they, let me put it this way, they should have got a better narrator for this book. It's the book could have been better with a better narrator, let me just put it that way. Not shining example of audiobook greatness by any means. Anyway, I think that'll do for my review. I seem to have panned this book quite a lot. However, I'm going to give it a 3.5-star review, because subjectively, that's what I have to do. There's no point in me saying that I didn't enjoy this book. I actually really did enjoy it. There's a lot of stuff in this book, even though I completely panned it. And it just, in some ways, it doesn't make any sense. But it has to make sense to me, because this has to be done subjectively. There's no way that I can tell you I didn't enjoy this book as much as many other books that I've given 3.5 stars to. So just check it out. Go back through some of this things. But it does have, you know, a major point. A major, can't think of the word now, but, you know, reservation. Let me put it that way. Reservation. If you're looking for background noise, background sound, and maybe you've got a commute, or you've got long air travel, or you've just got some time to kill, this book will fill your time in a perfectly adequate kind of way. And this is probably the greatest damning with faint praise exercise I've ever been on. This book is great background listening. That's all I can say. And I actually do look forward to the third book, if only just to see how long it's going to be and if anything's ever going to happen. You know, why is this guy legendary? We have some of the legends already, but really, I want him to turn evil. Can he turn evil? I want him to turn evil. That's all I ask. Please make this guy evil. I want him to be a bad guy for at least a bit. Not perfect all the time. But, you know, he still has to think he was doing the right thing, but he has to be a bad guy. Right, that's the end of my review. What do I say at the end here? Ah, next book that I'm going to review is a Rifters book. Now, Rifters is by an author called Peter Watts. Peter Watts. Whatever, I normally would say, hey, Peter Watts is... What I'm going to say now is, do not go and look at Peter Watts' blog. Do not go and look at the photos of his leg. That's all I'm going to say. Do not go and do this. Do not go and look at Peter Watts' website at the moment. Just don't do it. Don't go there right now to peterwatts.com, whatever. I don't know if you know this website. Just don't go there and have a look at the pictures of his leg. That's all I can say now. Don't do that. Anyway. I'll read the second book in the Rifters series. I seem to be doing quite a few second books in the series at the moment, but another book that I have on audiobook is called When Gravity Fails, which was recommended on an SFF audio podcast a while ago, which looks pretty good. It's by, let me just check this out, it's by George Alec Effinger, and it's a part one of a series, I think, When Gravity Fails. I'm looking forward to getting to that because it seems to have some good reviews and it seems like quite an interesting book in its own right. So, thanks a lot for listening. Next up, oh, normally actually, what do I do here? I look on goodreads.com for the page here. Let me just check it out. So I rated it 3.5 stars. Friends reviews, 5-star average on goodreads.com. I guess not. Oh, most people have just marked it 2 reads. Only a few of my friends on Goodreads.com. 4.57 for Wise Man's Fear by Patrick Loftus on Goodreads.com. But I think it's, of course, that's going to happen because it's all the fans of the first book suddenly jump out and start reading the second book and give it lots of good reviews. And I guess that's what I did as well. I was like, hey, first book, hey, second book. So, thanks a lot for listening, and email me, luke@juggler.net. Follow me on Twitter, I'm at Luke Burridge on Twitter. Follow me on goodreads.com/Luke Burridge, and yeah, go check out my blog, lukeburridge.com/blog. I'm putting stuff up there all the time, photos and videos and music and writing and all kinds of stuff. So thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.